Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Our guest this evening is Brett Oldham, and he has been researching and investigating the paranormal since his teen years. Based out of Las Vegas, he and his wife Gina research a wide spectrum of the paranormal, including ghosts, UFOs, and cryptozoology. They've been featured on numerous radio shows, magazines, newspapers, and television in the USA, New Zealand, and Europe, including shows on Biography Channel, Discovery Channel, CBC Canada, TV7 in Bulgaria, and most recently, Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. Brett is the author of Children of the Greys, a personal account of his lifelong alien abduction experiences, and Ghost Stories of Las Vegas is another of his books. He's also contributed two articles in a book by Brad Steiger, and his website is www.childrenofthegreys, and that's GREYS.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing topics you won't hear on the mainstream media. And we'd like to thank Fiona, Vanya, and Claudia for hosting the switchboard this evening. And you can call with your questions or comments for Brett on 917-889-8292. We have an online Starseed community at starseedhotline.ning.com, and special thanks go to Tammy for her dedication to the forum. Starseed Hotline's toll-free number is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. If you have a birthday coming up, you've got 10 hours of power coming that you don't want to miss, so find out when it happens by requesting your solar return timing. So first this evening, I would like to introduce Anastasia and the Starseed News. Hello, Anastasia.
Good evening, everybody. It's great to be with you tonight. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, great, great. I always have to check that. Well, we've had a lot happening across the planet in the last week. We've got a lot of news to cover, so I just better get right to it. There's been a filament eruption. They think it might be Earth-directed. This happened on the sun. And this is interesting because, and this comes from spaceweather.com, they say that for days, amateur astronomers around the world have been monitoring an enormous filament of dark plasma snaking across the face of the sun. I thought that was interesting because they indicate amateur astronomers. I don't know why that would be so. But anyway, today that erupted, and they took a movie from NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory that seems to show debris from the blast hurtling in the general direction of Earth. So they are telling us to stay tuned for coronagraph data which could confirm or refute an Earth-directed CME from the far side of the sun. All right, and the significant far side flare has also occurred. They say a sunspot located just behind the sun's northeastern limb exploded yesterday, producing a significant solar flare, according to NOAA analysts. So they are waiting to see what that's going to do. They say that it could also be Earth-directed as it turns around. They say that this CME emerged from the blast site, traveling about 2,000 kilometers an hour, which is actually 4.5 million miles per hour, and it produced strong radio bursts and a far-side solar proton storm. So they say that only the intervening limb of the sun prevented potentially strong Earth effects. So we're going to wait and see, because they say the source of explosion will reveal itself as the solar rotation carries it up and over the sun's limb. So they say Earth-directed solar activity could be just a few days away. And the moon's full phase is going to start now on September 8th. That's just next Monday. This is going to be a corn moon or a full harvest moon. And this full moon's name is attributed to Native Americans because it marked when corn was supposed to be harvested. Now, most often they say the September full moon is actually the harvest moon, which is the full moon that occurs closest to the autumnal equinox. Now, in 2 years out of three, the harvest moon comes in September. But in some years, it occurs in October. And at the peak of harvest, they found that farmers can work late into the night by the light of this moon. Now, they say that usually the full moon will rise an average of 50 minutes later each successive night. You know, we've watched that. Every night, it seems to rise a little bit later. And it does. But for the first few nights around the harvest moon, the moon seems to rise at nearly the same time each night, enabling farmers and Indians in the past, of course, to gather corn and pumpkins, squash, beans, and wild rice, which were the chief staples that the Indians gathered for their survival in the winter. So that's why it's called the harvest moon.
And isn't
that something? I think that's fascinating. By the way, incidentally, yesterday, the 1st of September, was absolutely the best day to plant lettuce and greens in your garden. Great planting day. You can still do that for another couple, 3 days and get the best effects for planting your winter greens. For those of you that are into that sort of thing, this is the time to get your lettuce and spinach seeds in the ground. Well, according to Apollo astronauts that conducted or were in on the Apollo lunar landing missions between 1969 and the end of 1972, the moon stinks. They said that the lunar dirt smells very, very bad. I had never heard this before, but this came out of space.com. This was an article that they had about this. And they say that up to this day, moonwalkers, previous moonwalkers and scientists are still trying to decide exactly what the moon's aroma is all about. The astronauts that walked on the moon say that it was the smell of gunpowder or spent gunpowder, and that it smelled explosive. It was really heavily ash-smelling and very heavy odor. Well, they are saying now that a professor of astronomy at Cornell University way back before this 1972 moon landing flagged the explosive potential of moon rock. He warned NASA prior to Apollo 11 that the lunar dust brought into the lunar module might spontaneously combust and produce a safety issue. This was one scientist that had realized that the reactive nature of lunar surface, the lunar dust, existed. And now they're saying, well, he's right. It is possibly combustible, but it never did explode, so it's really not quite that bad. But there's something going on there because it is a conductive or a reactive type of dirt. Isn't that something? You wouldn't want to drop a match on the moon. Boom. Something might happen. So I had never heard that before, and I thought that was really interesting. And that is just surfacing. Had you ever heard that? Anything about that?
No, but I thought you were going to say it smelled like bad cheese.
Oh. That's cute.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, it might to some. They said it was acrid, grit, and sour smelling. So maybe, yeah, to some people it might. Well, we have a really interesting little article tonight to talk about. It involves all of us. There's a controversy reigniting over the distance of the Pleiades. The most precise measurement yet of the distance to the Pleiades star cluster is reviving a dispute that has split the astronomy community largely down a transatlantic divide for the past 17 years, the U.S. versus Europe, kind of. The latest result from a U.S. team using a worldwide network of radio telescopes is in agreement with more than a dozen previous measurements of the Pleiades, and this distance is made using multiple techniques, and I did leave that out of this news article because it is way too technical. But our measurement stands in sharp contrast to a figure from the Hipparcos satellite of the European Space Agency, and there's quite a little tiff going on between these scientists. They say that much rides on the debate about how far away the Pleiades is, because the Pleiades cluster, they say, is made of young stars, only 100 million years old and visible to the naked eye in the Taurus constellation. Many of the consensus measurements were made using the apparent brightness of the stars compared with their intrinsic brightness based on models of their stellar burning processes. Well, anyway, it means that if the European model is correct, it challenges our scientists' understanding of young stars, everything about young stars and everything that happens to them afterwards, including the fate of their planetary systems. According to the astronomers and scientists, a lot rides on this one little bit of data as to how far away the Pleiades actually are because of the measurements that we've used to determine that and what these measurements have indicated about the process of stellar life and things like that. So that's going on. Interesting about the Pleiades. They don't know how far away it is, even when they thought they did. And there's been a lot of volcanic activity across the planet. There has been an Ecuadorian volcano called the Throat of Fire that has started spewing ash 28,000 feet into the air. It's being closely monitored by experts after an eruption this past weekend. The name of the volcano is the Tungurahua. Its name means Throat of Fire. It went 28,000 feet into the sky and was the latest eruption after a period of calm. It has started spewing pyroclastic flows, lava, a fast-moving current of hot gas and rock, which reaches temperatures of about 1,000 degrees centigrade. And we've heard a lot about global warming and the melting of the polar ice caps. And you know who really started that? Al Gore. Al Gore predicted the Arctic would be ice-free. He gave a speech some years back that was quite apocalyptic. He said the North Polar ice cap is falling off a cliff, he said. It could be completely gone in summer in as little as 7 years from now. That was in 2007. And this was while he was accepting the Nobel Peace Prize for his campaign on climate change. But 7 years after his warning, the Daily Mail ran an article, and they said that far from vanishing, the Arctic ice cap has expanded for the second year in succession with a surge, and depending on how you measure it, between 43% and 63% since 2012. To put it another way, an area the size of Alaska was open water 2 years ago, but is now covered by ice. And crucially, the present ice is also thicker and therefore far more resilient to future melting. So they said it's clear from the measurements that have been collected on the Arctic sea ice recently that it has experienced a significant recovery in thickness over just the past year. So there's been a lot of debate, very vigorous debate, about the authenticity of global warming, and there are certainly plenty of figures and data that indicate that far from melting, the ice up at the poles is increasing. And there is a little bit of facts to back that up. Well, there have been some storms across the planet, as always, a lot of flooding, a lot of severe storms, lightning and such. Northern Kansas lost power for 5,000 people on Sunday due to severe storms, and a freak thunderstorm went through the Bronx, New York area, causing massive flooding and airport closures. Even two people were struck by lightning, and it really messed up their Labor Day weekend events. A volcanic fissure has erupted in Holoran near the Dingjujokul Glacier. That's the volcano that we are always talking about that I tell you I can't pronounce. How'd they do? I hope I did a little bit better.
Yeah.
There was an earthquake in the area over the weekend and a volcanic eruption that followed. It resulted in a temporary no-fly order. Experts are carefully watching this volcano, along with transportation specialists and meteorologists from all over the world. The last time an Iceland volcano erupted, it canceled many thousands of airline flights across the world, and so everybody is watching it. It's very active. The particular fissure we're talking about tonight is over half a mile long. So it is very active and producing more and more activity. Now, actually, there are 44 volcanoes that are erupting across the planet right now. 44. Not just Iceland, not just Venezuela. There are eruptions in Papua New, Papua New Guinea, Costa Rica, in Japan. Two volcanoes erupting in Japan right now. And all over the world, 44 volcanoes. And, again, in Papua New Guinea, Mount Tabervir is erupting. This just started now. This is just since Friday. It's caused explosions strong enough to rattle houses, and people are standing around wanting to know if they need to evacuate. They haven't decided yet, but there has been a giant ash cloud, and it is affecting flights to and from Australia. So we have intense volcanic activity all over the planet occurring right now. In Greece, there was an earthquake with a magnitude 5.6 that occurred in Greece on the 28th of August. That was Thursday. There have been no reports of injuries or damages, but the shock was widely felt in Athens and Crete. The U.S. Geological Survey gave a preliminary magnitude of 5.6, while the Greek Institute of Geodynamics gave it a 5.7, very minor difference there. Well, before the Napa quake that happened last week, some San Francisco Bay residents reported seeing mysterious flashes of light in the sky. They say that some people wondered if it was connected to UFOs or what that might be, but experts are saying that these lights in the sky were not UFOs, but they were connected to the light. They're called earthquake lights, and it's the quick buildup of stress that causes an electrical current to flow from the surface and burst through to the top, to the outside of the earth. They say this is very typical before or after an earthquake. So, interesting. Not a UFO, they say. It was light coming out from an electrical discharge within the earth. Well, in Madagascar, they are having a real problem with insects. They have had an enormous cloud of locusts in Madagascar. It's causing panic for the 9 million agricultural workers. They're saying it is a gigantic plague, and desperate farmers have been attempting to protect their land by starting fires and increasing their use of insecticides to get rid of these bugs. We've been talking a lot about California's drought, and there's an article out of CBS Sacramento that says that East Porterville residents are without water as their wells are going dry. This is a pretty sad and serious story, and apparently this has been going on for quite a while. They say that nearly 1,000 people in Porterville, whose wells have gone dry due to drought, received an emergency allotment of bottled water. They say hundreds of people have no water anymore after their wells have run dry during the drought. They have this town, East Porterville, in Tulare County, has about 7,300 residents, and they say at least 300 homes have been without water for weeks. They say that, in fact, they can't shower, they're wearing dirty clothes, they have to wear dirty clothes to school. It's really miserable for them. And a lot of people weren't even reporting it because they were afraid that they would be evicted by their landlords or their kids would be taken away. So the county didn't even know how bad the problem was until they were tipped off by a nonprofit group. So the county got busy. It set up a 5,000-gallon water tank for the residents to help with the flushing of their toilets and irrigation. But they say that now drinking water is a real problem. They had to distribute more than 15,000 gallons of drinking water last week. Wow. And so they say it's taking 12 gallons of water per every person, and that is considered a three-week supply. 12 gallons for 3 weeks is not an awful lot of water.
So far, the
county says they've spent $30,000 on water. They want the state to reimburse them. In the meantime, I might add, interestingly enough, there are many bottling plants in the state of California where companies bottle water and sell it. And that's private property, and they have the rights to the water. But it's so ironic that the people that live off the land don't have any water, and they have to purchase water from the bottling companies in California that bottle the water. I think that's something to think about. Anyway, in the whole area of the West, the situation is continuing to widen, and it is definitely getting worse. In fact, there has been discussion, rumored discussion, that certain individuals in the UN have discussed the possible necessity of migrating people from the state of California in the event the drought does not abate. So they're talking now about moving people out of the state. don't know, but it is a real serious problem. And because the surface water of the reservoirs and other places that people get their water, people now have begun to tap their wells, and this, as indicated by Porterville, the wells are running dry. But now the state is very concerned about the dry wells that are happening. They say that the wells across California account to up to 60% of the water usage, and the groundwater levels have been plunging 100 feet lower than the normal level for water. They say that the wells that are being drilled are being drilled further and further into the earth, 500 feet in some cases. And this is forcing the California State Legislature to consider regulating underground water for the very first time. Water is going to be a major issue as we move into the future, and it certainly is already emerging right now to the people out west, and we want to send them light and energetic help and hope that we get some rain and to help this situation. It is a serious one. You know, California has long battled over water rights, the rights to the rivers, the lakes, and other surface water supplies. But now this quarrel and this struggle is finally shifting the focus to groundwater. So, because other sources are drying up. So, there we go. Well, that's going to be it for tonight's news, Ariel. I'm looking forward to the program. It's going to be very fascinating. Got a good show coming up.
I know, I agree. So, well, Anastasia, thank you so much for bringing us information that I doubt many of us would hear or even understand, even know about if you didn't bring it to us. So we do thank you.
That's right. You're so welcome.
And right now I am going to turn it over to Lavendar. And we have Brett on the switchboard, Lavendar, so I'm going to bring him on right now. In just a moment, I'll click that button. Okay. Hello, Brett. Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy.
Hello, thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's our pleasure. I know Lavendar has been wanting to have you on the show for a long time. So, Lavendar, take it away.
Okay. Well, Brett, I'm so happy that we finally got you on the show tonight. So I want to start out by reading the back of your book, if I might. One calm autumn night in a house surrounded by farmland in rural southern Illinois, a young five-year-old boy wakes to see a bright light shining through the window. As he pulls the curtains back to look for the cause of the strange light, he comes face to face with a hideous-looking alien creature. What followed next began a lifetime of abductions by these strange alien beings. In Children of the Greys, a true story of his numerous alien encounters, author Brett Oldham relives many of these traumatic alien abduction experiences, from mind control experiments, sexual interludes, healings, unexplainable scars, hybrids, incredible multiple abductions with another witness and a fetus being taken, to the paranormal connection and more, all described in great detail. Theories and insights into the possible alien agenda by some of the world's leading UFO and alien abduction experts are also presented here. Memories that had been suppressed for years by the alien surfaced after receiving therapy for a series of anxiety attacks. Memories that were kept secret for decades are now revealed for the first time in this very personal, thought-provoking account of one man's journey through the enigma of the alien abduction phenomena. So, Brett, bravo, bravo, bravo for writing this book. I know this was not an easy task to have you relive a lot of these experiences to put down on pen and paper, but I must say that after reading it and experiencing the things that I've experienced for over 30 years, I really was thrilled that you were courageous enough to come forward and write this book. So, Brett, welcome.
Thank you, Lavendar. It was a difficult thing. It took 2 years to write. I kept having to stop because it was painful to kind of go through a lot of that stuff again. But I felt it was really necessary. I'd waited over two decades to come out with this, and I just felt the time was right. You know, I felt that I could help other people that might be having these experiences. So many people that are having these experiences feel so alone. They don't have anybody to talk to. They don't know where to turn. You know, society still has this stigma of we're all wearing tinfoil hats and anal probe jokes and all that kind of stuff. And hopefully there's starting to be some shift in that level of thinking. I have noticed that recently, but I just knew that I wanted to let people know that they're not alone in this, and I put it all out there. I didn't hold anything back. Some of it was rather embarrassing, but I wanted people to know, like, this is the kind of stuff that goes on, and we can't sugarcoat it. And I also wanted to just help bring about more awareness to the subject in general, because it's a worldwide phenomenon. It's happening on a much grander scale than people realize or are really completely aware of. And even since the books came out, I mean, I've been contacted just from people all over the world that will start off their communication by, I've never told anybody this before, but, and then could start, you know. So there's so many people there that are holding it in, and just like I did, you know, I mean, for fear of the ridicule, and your friends and coworkers and even relatives, you know, and I'm trying to help change that.
Well, you know, on our radio show, we have a lot of people that have had these experiences. We really cater to the starseeds, walk-ins, light workers, people that are awake. So a lot of people that are listening tonight, a lot of them have had abduction experiences. So later on, I will turn it over to Ariel in the switchboard, and hopefully some of the people that are listening will want to call in and talk to you about it. But why don't we start at the beginning and just when did the abductions begin for you?
Well, like you read in the book, I was 5 years old. I was living a sheltered life in a farm in southern Illinois, really out in the middle of nowhere, literally just a gravel road going by the farmhouse. And it was an old two-story farmhouse. We had an old black and white television. It isn't like kids these days where you're, you know, watching all the videos and the movies and the media like it is now. I had never been exposed to even people of another race, let alone anything to do with aliens or anything like that. My family was Southern Missionary Baptist, very religious people, and anything that got brought up, I never even heard about life on other planets at that stage in my life, but anything else was just pretty much blamed on demons, and that was it, you know, and you just didn't talk about it. And so my stepdad and my mom had to save on the heating bill when they got in the fall. It started getting cold out. They'd move us kids downstairs. So they had a master bedroom downstairs, and they'd shut off the stairway in this old house. It was actually in the middle of the house where they had a doorway to it, and you could shut it off in the rest of the house, and that's what they did to save on the heating. And so I was sleeping on a mat on the floor, basically, and with my brother. My sister was on the sofa, and I was just awakened one night by this very bright light coming through the window. And there was no street lights or anything like that. It was just all that we ever had was the natural ambient light of the moon. And it caught my curiosity. And then I started hearing a voice, which at first I looked around thinking it was my stepdad saying something to me because it was in my head. And it kept coaxing me to come to the window. So I wasn't afraid at all at that time. I was just a curious little boy, and I had no reason to fear anything. And I got up and walked toward the window. I didn't go to the window that the light was coming through. It seemed like they wanted me to go to the front window, which was just adjacent around the corner to it. And we had these real thin, wispy white curtains, no blinds. Really didn't need it around there. Was nobody around. And I remember raising my right hand and pulling the curtains back, and I came face to face with what we know now as a typical gray. I mean, just right on the other side of the window. And the shock of that I had no way to process it. You know, I hadn't been exposed to any kind of movies with aliens or comic books or anything. I mean, I just couldn't process it. And before I could cry for help, scream, or anything, I blacked out, and the next time I opened my eyes, you know, typical scenario of being on a forum and in a very brightly lit room surrounded by more of these beings, and there was actually three of them initially. Two of them was standing about 15 feet back by the tree in the front yard, and that began, I was hysterical, hysterical. It left such a mark on my psyche that for decades I had nightmares about some of the other incidents also, but that first one was so shocking to me. I would still just have this dream of pulling the curtain back and coming face to face with the gray. And that was my first introduction to it. And initially on the first time, they turned themselves into doctors, you know, and that didn't work to calm me down. And so they appeared in their natural form again. And the only thing that really, they ended up taking me to an area of a craft where it was a semicircular area that was actually built into the craft with these blue kind of cushion things on the seats. And there was several more of the small grays, and this is my first introduction to the tall gray, was at that very first time that they took me. And he basically did it to befriend me, and I had nothing else to grasp onto, you know, and I kind of, as a young child, that was the only calming thing that I had, because he was saying nice stuff to me. And that kind of began a long relationship with this particular tall gray as well. And I was taken one more time from that same farmhouse, second time in a slightly different way. And after that, I was telling my mother that about my, you know, these little men that came and got me and everything. And just like a lot of parents do, they thought their child was, she thought it was just imaginary friends. And that's one of the things that when I do talks now, you know, I bring that up a lot, because I think parents should listen to their children. There's a lot going on in the paranormal world as well as the UFO field. And yes, kids do have imaginary friends, but, you know, you need to not blow it off as and use a little more discretion in finding out exactly what your child's imaginary friend is, because, you know, if I would have been listened to on a serious basis, maybe I wouldn't have been so scarred by it. And my mom had been telling us that the Wizard of Oz movie was coming on, and she was really hyping it for us kids to see. And when it did come on, we all gathered around, you know, this small little black and white television to watch it. And I was really excited about it till the flying monkey scene came on. And I got really upset by it. I didn't want to watch it anymore. And I think it was just something about the same little, same size type, and they were, you know, kidnapping and all this kind of thing. And the Grays seemed to know that that was a trigger point for me. I'm sure they had already implanted me at that point. And it was at that time that they suppressed my memories. And it stayed suppressed all the way to my early 20s.
Let's talk about this suppression. How did you remember? Did you go to a hypnotist, or how was it that you decided to let these memories surface?
Well, I had my whole childhood, I started having a lot of paranormal events, and I got very interested in that. And as I grew older, you know, I would start reading everything to do with anything unusual, and mostly just so I could learn to make it stop, because I became a ghost magnet. We can maybe talk about that later and the reasons why. But and so I had always had this, you know, I started learning about the field and everything like that, but I still never thought, I mean, maybe deep down, maybe my natural intuition knew, but I had all the classic signs, like, you know, nosebleeds and these unusual scars popping up on my body and things like that. But when it really surfaced, I began to have a really severe anxiety attacks. And I had been an athlete when I was younger, played a lot of sports, been in front of big crowds. At that time, I was actually a professional musician, playing shows every night. Not really your typical person that's going to be prone to anxiety attacks. And it got crippling. I mean, I developed like agoraphobia, and I didn't even want to just like leave the house anymore, and I couldn't figure out why. So I ended up in therapy. Still had no idea what was the cause. I just knew that I had to do something to get better because I was literally about to drop out of society. And the first therapist, nothing helped. It was still happening. And I finally found another guy who started talking to me initially about past lives, which I had already became very interested in. And I liked the guy. And he started teaching me different relaxation techniques. I never have been regressed for the abductions. Every memory that I have is natural. It's never been induced by hypnosis. I pretty much learned how to control myself and do these relaxation techniques in order to control the anxiety. I started meditation classes, and it was at that point that it was sort of a breakthrough, and just this floodgate of memories start coming, sometimes through dreams, sometimes I would see certain trigger objects and it would come back, and it eventually, it really was just like just this flood of memories, and I did not want to accept it. I denied it. I was like, there's no way this is happening to me. It's just a hard thing to deal with, and I couldn't stop it at that point. And so I continued on. Once I did accept it and I realized, like, okay, this is really, this put all the pieces together, the puzzle. This is why I had all these uncontrollable nosebleeds, and this is why I got these scars, and on and on. And so I then decided I would keep doing as much mental training as I possibly could in order to protect myself from the grays, basically, because of the mind control that they use on you to control you, you know. But initially, that's how it all came to surface.
So would they take you at night or would they take you sometimes during the day? And have you logged a lot of missing time through this?
I really wasn't paying a lot of attention to missing time until later in life, because to me it was sort of just irrelevant. I mean, I knew I was being taken, and, you know, my whole thing, I just sort of went into like a survival mode. You go through all these different stages, and when it happens, I tried to resist. I decided I wouldn't cooperate with them, and I do believe that most of the abductions take place at night. But it can happen at daytimes. And there's been times when I was a kid. Looking back now, I spent a lot of time. We had moved from Illinois to Ohio, and I spent a lot of time roaming the woods by myself. And there was times, you know, where I had some odd time things going on with that. So I just think it's just they use just the opportune time. It doesn't really matter day or night. It's just when it's the best opportune time for them. But I sincerely believe, I actually witnessed it, wrote about it in the book, that they're using dimensional portals to take us. And that's why the people describe, like a lot of people describe floating through the roof or floating through the wall, that type of thing like that. I've actually asked them many times, you know, I wanted to know like how they're doing it, because so many times I would just black out. If I saw them wherever I was at, you know, in the bedroom or whatever, then I would see them momentarily, knowing that they were in my plane of existence, and then I would black out, and then the next thing I would wake up, and I would be wherever they had taken me. And it bothered me for years and years and years, like, how is this happening? How are they doing this? You know, how did other people not see them? You know, that type of thing like that. And it was only recently that it was really revealed to me as far as, like, actually eyewitness how they do it. And one of the biggest fears that you have in this, and I'm sure any listeners that's had these experiences will attest to this, is you worry what will happen to your other family members, your children or your spouse or partner. Because in my case, although I've taken positive things from this, you know, it's been a lot of negative experiences. I mean, anytime you're taken and stuff's done to you against your will, that, in my book, is a negative experience. And so you don't really, I wouldn't really wish it on anybody. And so one of my biggest fears is that they're going to take my wife. And it was only a few years ago that we were in Tennessee, and I heard a tapping sound on the side of the bed. Because we do a lot of paranormal work, I first thought that's exactly what it was. And I was awake, but I didn't open my eyes. I was laying on my side. I hear it again. I still wait. I hear it again. And when I opened my eyes, I got quite a shock because it wasn't spirit or ghost related. It was three grays lined up along my side of the bed. And the difference this time was the whole bedroom wall that I was facing wasn't there anymore. And I was looking, the only thing I could describe it as something similar to a what looks like a, when you see a water mirage type thing, the texture sort of like that. But I could see through it, and it was oval-shaped, and it had a sort of a white misty ring around it. And through that, I could see into a craft, and I could see another gray in the craft. And my first thought was, I knew I was getting ready to be taken, but I couldn't understand why they had woke me up first, except for that they were going to take my wife, Gina, as well. And I know that they understand that that's something that I don't want to happen, and I tried to scream. I couldn't. And I was screaming in my head, begging him, please don't take her, please don't take her. And, of course, now, you know, I go over this many times in the book, the emotional, the scenarios that they set up to test and monitor your emotional responses. This was just another thing they were doing. They knew they were going to get me agitated and upset just by the whole thought of it. But I was starting to scream the word no, and I couldn't get it out physically, but in the time that it took to start that word in my mind, screaming the word no, in an instant I was inside the craft, and then they stopped blocking my physical ability to do that, and the word came out. So it was like that quick, instantaneous, the word no. You know, started it in my bed, couldn't get it out, and instantly I'm inside the craft. So I think they actually did me a favor that time and let me see how they do it. But I do believe they're opening up these the dimensional portals. I know it sounds sci-fi, and it's a lot of people can't wrap their heads around it, but just because we don't understand, you know, our level of quantum physics doesn't mean that it's not capable. And, you know, I know already that we've found 11 different dimensions. Who knows how many more there are. And even, I think, last year, NASA found wormholes, little black holes opening and closing all around the Earth's atmosphere they never knew was there. And they're even, like, saying that if they could learn to control and manipulate this, it's unlimited what they could do, travel through dimensions, even time travel. So, you know, we're getting there. We're way behind, but we're getting there. But I'm convinced that this is exactly how they do it, how they're going in and taking people without anybody else or anybody seen it unless they want it to be seen.
Now, has anybody else in your family been abducted, or you're the only one?
I think
your parents, or how about Gina?
Yeah,
has Gina been taken?
She has, yeah. I don't like saying that, but it's something I can't control. I feel guilty about it. I don't think that anything serious has been done to her more than being tagged. By tagged, I mean implanted, just to monitor her being with me, a long-time abductee. But we've had a really profound experience about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, where we woke up and I noticed, like, right away that she had two scratch marks on each side of her collarbone, almost matching, almost identical. And, of course, being a paranormal investigator, you know, your natural thing is to debunk stuff first before jumping to any conclusions. And I thought, well, maybe it's odd that you would scratch yourself in your sleep, but it happens, but that you would scratch yourself exactly on each side of your collarbone is kind of odd. You know, in the same place on each side, on almost the same length. And we just kind of chalked it up to that until I got in the shower and I felt a burn on my leg and on my calf, and I looked down, and I had not only been scratched, I mean, I had a gash about 7 inches long. And I was like, okay, this is getting a little past coincidence. She scratched up. I'm really scratched, pretty deeply on the same night. You know, like, okay, now the chances of this being coincidence is starting to not enter into the equation, and it kind of got our attention. And then I'm still thinking, well, this is still possibly something paranormal because you know, negative spirits are known to scratch people. Although in my case, it was pretty severe. Until I went over to make the bed a little bit later, and between our pillows, I found a bloody, what appears to be blood, handprint, a left hand with four fingers. It has a thumb and three fingers. It doesn't appear to be a handprint of your typical gray, because the fingers are way too fat, but it was like if you just, a child dipped their, you know, like the handprint we used to make when we were all in first grade, you know, except it looks like blood. I haven't got it tested yet. It's freaked us out so bad that we saved the sheet. We took pictures, saved the sheet. But it seems like it was done on purpose because of the way the hand was positioned, it looks like something purposely leaned over Gina's side of the bed. That's where their left hand would have been placed, and it, with the angle up and stuff, looked very much like something leaning over and left it there on purpose. We weren't bleeding any. I mean, we were both scratched, but there was no blood from our scratches that we could find anywhere. No blood on the pillows anywhere. So, and not to mention that amount of blood that would encompass your whole hand. That's a lot of blood. And we think that they were just letting us know in sort of a perverted way that, yes, we've taken her, and here's your proof.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you've been implanted. Can you tell us what you've learned about the implants, and have they explained to you anything about the implants and what they're used for?
Not really. Most of the time, in my experiences, the small grays won't answer a whole lot of anything. They just still kind of repeat the same condescending mantra that they usually do of, you know, we won't hurt you and don't be afraid and all that kind of stuff, which when this has happened to somebody as long as it's happened to me, it really does just get to that. It's totally condescending. But in my opinion, I don't believe the grays, the small grays, are the actual true aliens. The tall ones are. The tall ones are clearly the leaders, and they will interact and answer questions, at least as far as my experience. I think the small grays were recreated by the tall grays as workers. I think they're biological robots. They all seem to do, they're very logic-based. They all seem to be a hive mentality, really. And they just go about doing what they need to do and how they need to do it, very matter of fact, and that's it. So they've never really in-depthly explained, you know, other than the same type of thing that told me that it wasn't going to hurt and that type of thing, which wasn't true. The first implant I know I had was the typical nasal implant. I clearly remember it. Talk about that in the book, but which I think has caused numerous nosebleeds that I've even went to the doctors for. They couldn't figure out a cause for it either. Throughout my childhood and all the way into my 20s, and I actually asked for them to take it out, to move it somewhere else. Which I believe they have. I believe it's behind my left ear now. And I think they use these implants for different reasons, obviously to find you, because people think, oh, you can just move, I'll just move to a different house or I'll move to a different state. You know, trust me, I've moved a lot, and it doesn't matter where you're at. You're not going to get away from it. But I believe these implants, they're measuring like your syntax sensory information, which is, it allows them, the aliens, to monitor what you see, what you hear, and I, to some degree, I think that they might even be able to control your thoughts, which is a very, very scary thing to think about. But I mean, even us now, you know, there's technology that we're working on. Neuroscience is a new thing. And, you know, they're using these neurotransmitters. They're getting smaller, you know, nanotechnology. I mean, you can't even see some of this stuff unless you have a microscope that they can actually implant. Us, you know, can do this. So I'm sure this is where we got the technology. But so I think that the whole thing with the implants is mainly for that purpose. Because to me, as far as the grays and to some degree even the reptilians, I believe that they do work together on occasion. I believe that there's a certain faction of our government that works that's in conjunction with this, and that as far as the grays, it's all about the hyper program, and they need to understand us on an emotional level. They're creating these hybrids that the grays, as it's pretty well known, are pretty devoid of emotions. Why? I don't think anybody really completely knows. I think it has a lot to do with relying on technology for so long that may play into it somewhat. But obviously, their bodies are in atrophy. Maybe to some degree, they're a dying race, and they're just doing what they have to do to survive. Look at us, you know, with animal testing and things like that, which I'm 100% against. But, you know, we do the same thing. And so they need to monitor. They don't understand human emotions. They don't understand human sexuality. And I don't know if they ever will. I mean, we don't understand it ourselves, you know, even with our own species, which we just try to give them pills for it and all that type of thing. So I think the implants serve a lot of purposes like that. And I think they will sometimes create certain events or scenarios in one's life in order to elicit a certain emotion that they can monitor and try to learn from.
I know that there was a story that I read that just really touched me, and that was when you had a girlfriend, not the woman that you're married to now. Can you, would you mind telling us what happened going aboard ship and seeing her and then seeing other people aboard ship?
Yeah, there has been other incidents, you know, where I have seen other humans, but it was one of the most traumatic things for me as well. In the late 80s, I was living with a girl that, even though she was taking birth control pills, got pregnant, and everything was going fine with it, and I began to have another series of severe nosebleeds, which got kind of alarming to me. And we had been to the her gynecologist. She was 1 week shy of the fourth month, and everything was fine, perfect pregnancy. And one night, we hear a loud thud in the room, woke us both up, and we both woke up to the sight of our bedroom filled with grays. I saw five. She remembers seeing four. I think that there was one that was standing back. The way the house was designed, that the wall to the master bathroom would have been blocking that one. And they took us both at the same time, put us in the same room, put us on these tables not real far from each other. And it was the first time I had seen so many grays together at one time. And they were completely surrounding me, except they left the right side open so my view would be clear to her. They had her close to a wall that had some sort of equipment stuff, but they had her in your typical, like, position that women, you know, when you're getting an exam from a gynecologist or giving birth. And she was screaming, please don't take my baby, please stop, begging them. And I quickly realized what was happening. And they didn't suppress my voice or anything. They just let me scream as well. And I was so angry. I couldn't move my body. I could only move my head. And I was just calling them every name in the book and threatening to kill them all. And actually, if I would have been physically able to get up, I would have made my best effort to do that. And I decided I wasn't going to participate in their little experiment anymore, and I turned my head back straight because they'd left her side of the left side of her table open as well, so they left a clear view, so it was obviously done on purpose. And the one that was standing by my head put his long fingers and hand on my head, and even though they're not strong mentally, they're off the charts strong, and there's no resisting what they want you to do. And he took his hand and forced my head back to make me watch, and I couldn't turn my head again. I couldn't turn my head back anymore, and they forced me to watch it as they took the fetus. And the next morning, well, we woke up, and before we could even, like, register what had happened or anything, she noticed some blood on the sheets, and she said, I'm bleeding, and she went to the restroom, and she called out, you know, and she goes, yeah, you better call the doctor, you know, I'm bleeding some. And I called the doctor, and her doctor, and she says, you better come in and let us check it out. We were, and this was here in Las Vegas. We weren't very far from her doctor, and so we drove down there, and the doctor examined her and says, I think you've had a miscarriage. And she says, well, that's impossible. She goes, there was no tissue; it was just blood. I kept a close eye. I was so worried. And he says, well, you know, they did a procedure, the D&C, where they went in and scraped the room and womb, and we were just across the street from Women's Hospital in East Sahara, and so he went over there. We checked her in, and I called my mom and her mom and told them what happened. And at this time, I remembered everything, but I hadn't said a word to anybody about it, of course. And I was really distraught. And I was in the waiting room, and I saw the doctor come down the hall, and he had a weird look on his face, and I was a little alarmed, and I got up and I walked toward him, and my mom was kind of behind me, and I said, is everything okay? And he says, yeah, but it's the damnedest thing I ever seen. And I'm like, what? And he says, well, I went in to clean the womb, and it was like this woman was never pregnant. If I hadn't just seen her in my office, I wouldn't believe she was ever been pregnant. So the womb was already clean. There was nothing in there at all. And I just remember, like, turning to my mom and sort of just to response that she didn't even understand what I was talking about, and I just said they took it and walked away. And it traumatized both of us so much that when they released her and we were driving home, I mean, there was, you know, several days before we could even, like, bring it up. Like, I wanted to know if she remembered as well, and I found out that she did, and we sort of just made a pact, like, you know what, there's nothing we can change about it. There's nothing that can be done. No one's ever going to believe this. And we pretty much just kept it to herself, and I hadn't spoke to her in, oh man, 15 years at least. And we did a television show for Discovery Channel, and they asked about that, and they wanted to know if she would be interviewed and if she remembered, and I had no idea. But I found her on Facebook, Messenger on Facebook, and I said, you know, would you want to talk to these people? And all I asked her, I didn't have any idea what she remembered. I just asked her if she did remember it, and she said, absolutely, I do. I'm still petrified to sleep day. I sleep with a nightlight. You know, every night I think about it, and that they're going to come back. And so we actually were still living in Tennessee at that time, and out of respect to my wife now, they interviewed her at a different time. They flew us out to Las Vegas to do the show and to tape the show. And the producer came back from interviewing her, and I said, how did it go? And he said, well, she backed your story 110%, almost verbatim, remembers it exactly as you.
Wow. How long after that did your relationship cease?
Maybe a couple years. I mean, it put such a strain on it that, you know, it was just too much to handle. And the sad part is that since that story has came out in my book, that a lot of people that's contacted me, especially women, has had similar type experiences. I did have a police officer from New York City contact. He saw one of the shows we were on and got a hold of me and said the same thing happened to him and his wife, and they took him for the same reasons, to monitor his emotional reaction to it, did the same thing to him as they had done to me. And, of course, he was a police officer, and he's like, who am I going to tell? He goes, I'll lose my job, you know. He goes, we've never gotten over it. And so that's a really sad aspect of this whole phenomenon with the hybrid program, that there's a lot of women that are out there that the doctors, of course, are just going to try to find, just like happened with us, like, well, it's mysterious, I can't explain it, but, you know, and they just go on their way because they're not going to risk their practice for come out and elaborate on it. And the general public, you know, if your doctor says something, like, well, okay, you know, they don't realize that these are just people also. And so there's all these women out there that, some of them that contacted me claim to have had this happen to them numerous times. And that they seem to be like incubators. There's even a few that have contacted me that claimed that they had been basically raped. This was more, in this particular time, was reptilian, and then the fetus was taken. So, you know, there seems to be a definite hybrid program going on, and the gestation period seems to be the first trimester, and they take it.
You know, we've had several people come on our radio show talking about twins, the vanishing twin syndrome, and
right,
that one will be born, but in the fourth month, one will be taken. We have several stories of women claiming that that's happened to them. Are you familiar with the vanishing twin syndrome?
Yeah, I've heard of that, and it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, a lot of the women will also, and actually the title of my book really has to do, and the hybrid child that's on the cover of my book is really dedicated to her because of, and I don't know if it's the same fetus that was taken that time or not, because they take sperm from you as well. You know, there was one time that they brought in a hybrid gray, which basically was trying to sexually seduce me and probably succeeded. I only remember up to a certain point, and I can't remember anymore. And maybe that's, you know, sometimes I think your own subconscious mind just protects you, you know, in ways that there's some stuff that maybe it's better not to remember. But I think that just like the child, I think I don't know if they're trying to save their own race, creating a completely different species to inhabit and coexist with us, unbeknownst to us. I think that even the child that it happens to women more than men, but there has been men that have been presented with hybrids. But that made a big emotional impact on me as well. And my brother, Jeffrey Oldham, he's an award-winning artist out here in Las Vegas. And I knew that if I ever got the courage to write this book, that I knew what I was going to call it, because I feel such empathy for what happens to these women and even the men when they're involved, of having these fetuses taken from them and never to see them again unless you are presented with a hybrid, which is really, really hard to accept. And when they did the same thing to me about 3 years later, I was taken alone, and I was taken to an area of a craft that I had never seen before. It was large. It was very dimly lit, and it was a long ramp. In my experiences, I've seen a lot of ramps. They don't seem to favor stairs on these crafts. And at the end of the ramp, I just saw an entryway, a doorway, very bright light coming from the doorway. They do have the ability to manipulate light. It doesn't filter into other rooms like our light does. And the two small grays instructed me to stay. I was dressed this time. A lot of times they'll parade you around in the nude. I mean, you know, they don't seem to have much regard. So this time they seem to have some respect in that regard. And through the doorway, a figure broke the light, and as it did, the light started filtering into the room that I was in, because I was really apprehensive. I was really uncomfortable. I didn't know, you know, the dimly lit kind of large room, you never know exactly what to expect. And as a figure came up this long ramp, I noticed that it was a female hybrid, and I also noticed that she was carrying another female child, and she set the child down and started. She basically wanted me to interact with the child, and I refused. But she kept insisting. It was like almost like her job, and I looked down at the child, and it was just like the cover of the book. I mean, there was just something about her. She was different, but she wasn't hideous, and there was something about her eyes, just the softness and a certain look. My brother did a fantastic job of recreating what I interacted with, and I actually bonded with this child. Whether or not it was mine, I have no idea, but she seemed very curious and interested in me. She didn't communicate anything to me. I did talk to her. I actually spoke out loud, and just sort of like you would a child here, a young, you know, 2 or 3 year old child here, but she did seem to enjoy it. I actually started to enjoy it, and they seemed to sense that. They went, let it go on long enough, just to let me get to that point. And the adult hybrid woman picked her up and started walking away with her. And I asked her, please stop, wait, And I actually wanted to spend more time with this child. And I always wondered, and to this day I still wonder, if that was a part of me in some way, and will I ever see her again? What happened to her? What's her name? All these questions like go through your mind, and just knowing that she's out there somewhere, and it's all these years later. So I knew that if I ever did write about my experiences, that I had to put her on the cover.
Well, it's a beautiful picture. I'd like to ask you, after all these horrific experiences that have left you quite shattered in so many areas, what's the positive side? What's the upside that's given you with all of this? Tell us something that's given you the courage to stand taller in your power.
Well, that is the secret to it all. You have to learn to empower yourself, and you have to learn to realize what positives have came out of the experiences. Or a lot of people succumb to drug abuse, alcohol abuse. I recently, sadly enough, I know of two suicides from abductees that could not handle the anxiety once they started realizing what was happening to them. So it's a very, very serious thing, and anybody that's out there that's had the experiences, that is not the way to deal with it. You have to learn to increase your inner strength. There's ways to do that, and you cannot let them. You can't become a victim to it. And the more you can empower yourself here, basically, it's just accepting that there's nothing you can do there or from stopping it. But what I did was I realized, like, for one thing, even though I feel like a specimen, a lab rat, whatever you want to call it, they have kept me unbelievable healthy. So for my whole entire life, I'm never sick. I had sinus infections. I think I had a lot to do with the implant. But I rarely even get like a slight cold, and I think that has had something to do that they've had played a part in that my whole life. So they've kept me like extremely healthy. So I look at that as a positive. Like, well, I've had to endure physical stuff. I've got over it. Mental stuff. I've learned to deal with it. You never get over it, but I've learned to deal with it. And it also, I think, opened up my awareness to our earth and the things in it, and appreciate the life that we have here. My spirituality has increased 100-fold. I don't mean to offend anybody, but I turned my back on religion, organized dogmatic religion, which I would not have done had I not had these experiences. But because of that, I became a deeply spiritual person, I think it opens like that aspect of it, and my psychic awareness. I spent my childhood basically having all the spirit world contacting me. I'm hearing them. I know there might be people out there listening, going, "Well, this guy's he's completely nuts." I've got recordings, electronic voice phenomena. I've had witnesses, countless witnesses. I've been on tons and tons of cases. I have a gift of spirit communication. That's why I really believe it has something to do with the dimensional portals. I think that our frequency, a lot of the abductees that I've met come back with some kind of a gift, and it's some sort of a psychic gift normally. It could vary. Mine is the spirit communication, and clairaudience. They seem to seek me out for help because I really believe that from those of us that are taken and are going through these portals, it changes the frequency at which we're vibrating at, our chi, to put more closely match the dimension of the spirit world. and we become beacons to them. And so those of, on that side that need help, it's natural for them to seek us out. But there's many times that I've been on investigations that I've clearly heard them speaking to me that no one else can hear, and I'll say something out loud. You know, somebody just said blah, 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 whatever it is. I will have a digital recorder catch that. It'll record on the recorder. I've got loads of proof like that, but I think that's why they came to me so much when I was a kid, but I didn't understand it then, and I've used that now in a large part of my adult life. I've used that ability to help, and I'm not afraid anymore, haven't been for a very long time, of the spirit world, and I've used that ability to for them to move on, progress to where they're supposed to be, to help people on this side find closure and answers. And I, Gina and I do that to this day. So that's a gift that I probably wouldn't have been able to do had I not had these experiences. You know, so you look for those kinds of things, and you draw what you can out of it for the positives. And who knows, you know, and maybe they're doing the things that they've done to me out of necessity. A lot of it is very cruel. Maybe they have no idea the damage that they are doing to our species, you know, the psychological damage especially, by doing this. They may not fully understand it because they don't fully understand our emotion, you know. And so
I think you're right about that. I wanted to ask you, since the book has come out, have you had any abduction experiences? And do they know that you wrote the book?
Yeah. I actually think they wanted me to write the book. I think that the time, it's a timing thing, you know, like, the whole 2012 and the Age of Enlightenment is here. And I really think there is something to that. And I think that it took me that length of time not only to get the courage to write it, but I've been asked that, you know, like, why wouldn't they stop you? What, you know, but I don't think they want it stopped, because I revealed a lot of stuff that wasn't in your typical abduction book. I've never read an abduction book. I've never been able to get through one. I really respect Bud Hopkins' work, John Mack especially. I've read bits and pieces. It would bother me just too much. I never could get through one. But I think that they must be pleased with it. They haven't said anything like that to me. But the abductions have slowed down. They've never stopped. They're probably never going to stop. I've had the thing with the handprint happened since the book came out. So, but I've had several, you know, when I was younger in my prime of life, sometimes these things would happen on a real frequent basis. But, you know, now that I'm getting middle-aged, they have slowed down.
Have you met people that come up to you and say, I saw you aboard ship?
Yeah, that has happened.
Yeah,
that has happened. And oddly enough, I think another thing that happens with me, I've been able to. I don't know. Maybe you found this yourself, that there seems to be some sort of little, like an innate ability to recognize other people that's had these experiences without any words being said.
I agree with that. Totally.
Yeah. I spoke at MUFON out here in Nevada when we first got back out to Vegas, and they had about 90-some people show up. It was a nice crowd, and I'm up there speaking, and this has happened to me so many times. I actually write about one of the things in the book where I was doing a presentation on EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon, for a ghost group in Tennessee, and it was about 30-some people that, and there was a lady there. And I write about that in the book, recognizing her, and it turned out to be 100% right. Same thing happened out here. I'm looking out over the crowd, giving the presentation, and I there was three people. There was two women and a man. Two of the three I verified. They were complete strangers, but I verified that they've had experiences. So there was, you know, right out of a group that large, I just knew it. I just could feel it. And I did that. I've been invited, you know, different social gatherings and stuff like that. And it just seems like you can always tell. And I don't know if it's the energy thing that we recognize, you know, or possibly it's something in our subconscious that we have, like you said, have seen this person. The most people that I saw was a huge sexual experiment, and they were in a sort of a zombie-like state, but it was a large group of men and women in a very large room. And, you know, sometimes you wonder about that. Is that somebody that was at that thing, you know, that they seemed to be in almost drugged but still coherent. I did meet a lady that contacted me and told me that she remembered a very similar experience, and she had shown me some drawings. Now, I've since had a 3D modeler guy did some depictions of the room that this happened in and how it was laid out. I mean, I talk about it in the book, but it was still sort of hard to visualize, and she sent me some drawings describing some very similar type features in the room, which really got my attention. So I do believe that stuff happened.
Yeah, I do too. Wow. How does your friends and family react to this book after they learned your story?
For the most part, very positive. You do learn who your true friends are, but I think I've been fortunate enough to have a reputation of being of a man with good character. And when I came out with this, you know, people was like, "Wow, I never knew. I had no idea that you were going through this type of thing." But they believed me, and my family the same way. My daughter, she thought when she was 4 years old, she did the same, almost the same as I did, and was talking about the little men in her room, which just sent chills down my spine. And I knew, you know, you just are helpless in doing anything about it. And she has been very supportive, but she's scared to death of it. She don't want to read the book, hasn't read the book.
How old is she now?
23.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, she just graduated college, and she just said it scares her too bad. She doesn't want to think about it. So it really alarms me, because I do believe this is absolutely generational. My great-grandfather had some of the same traits. Never was sick a day in his life until almost right before he died. Was an energy healer like I am. They used to pay him with dowsing rods to find water wells and stuff, you know, way back years ago. And my mom remembers having an experience when she was 14 where she was taking she'd never been on an airplane or nothing, and she described it being put in some kind of chair, and there was all this equipment like a cockpit of an airplane and, you know, that type of thing. So it sounds like that at one time she was taken as well. So I do believe that part of it's generational. So some of my family really kind of understands. And, you know, Gina, my wife now, and she, it's a thing that people keep secret to the extent, like even I did, that for the first 2 years we were married, she didn't know. And she had seen the scars. In the Kindle book, I took pictures of the physical scars that I have. I've got scoop marks, puncture marks, large scars across my back. I put them in the Kindle version that's color, so it's a lot easier to see them than the print version. But I put it in both books, and she saw those. They're so obvious, you can't miss them. And she would ask me, like, "What happened to you?" And I would just say, "I don't want to talk about it." And then I had a lot of nightmares. And the book has actually been therapeutic in that regard, because since the it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders when I finally finished the book and got the courage to put it out, it really was, and it has helped. It's helped me therapeutically. You know, I the nightmares have really diminished from what they were, but she would be there when I was having these horrific nightmares, and she would wake me out of them, and so she knew something happened, and she's been around the paranormal and the UFO field for a long time as well, and she put two and two together, and just one day she just set me down, and she's like, look, something's happened, you got to tell me, and so she just didn't know that to what extent that it really was. I think that's what she was taken back the most about, that that it was way, that I remembered way more than she expected. But it's difficult for, that's an underlooked part of this, is that partners and spouses and family members, they're exposed to this as well. And that's something that people that have these experiences, when we go to sleep every night, you know, wondering like, because it might go months, but you still never know. And are they going to just take me? They're taking her too, or him, or whoever you're with, you know. And that's just something you got to look, you have to learn to deal with, because I know I just keep repeating this, but you're helpless against stopping any of this. You know, I've had people, well, if you just rebuke them in the name of Jesus, you know, it's like, really? If it was that easy, do you think I would have stopped this a long time ago? You know, there wouldn't be any alien abduction if it was that easy. It doesn't work. I'm sorry. There was a guy that slammed me on Amazon because I didn't agree with him about that. And he went on there and wrote a horrible review of the book because he was mad at me about that. You know, so I wish there was a way to stop it. I haven't found it. But I certainly don't want it happening to any of the family members. So once they found out about it, you know, that's one of the things I'm sure they're concerned about. But the support, for the most part, among people that I know and my friends and family, for the most part, has been very positive. And it helps tremendously in dealing with it all. And because once you do go public with this, you certainly walk around with a big target on your back. And you got to have a thick skin.
Yeah, I agree. I understand. I've had many, many, many years of ET experiences, and I really feel for what you have gone through, and I applaud you for writing this book. And at this time, I would like to have Arielle to come back on. She has the switchboard. I'm looking at the time, and hopefully that we'll have time for some people to call in and talk with you. It's been my pleasure speaking with you, and later on I'd like to call and talk to you privately, so we can do that later. But Ariel, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay.
All right, then. We do have some time to take calls or comments, questions for Brett, but you'll need to press 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to come on the air. So it'll take a minute for that process to happen. If anyone does have a question, remember, press 1, and one of our switchboard hosts will get you ready to come on the air. So, Brett, I also want to give you my sincere appreciation and respect for what you have been through and what you've accomplished through all of it, and being there to help other people, because not everyone has the courage that you do to just come out with it. And thank you so much for the work that you've done.
Well, you're very welcome. I mean, it's rewarding for me as well. As long as I'm willing to take the heat, so to speak, a lot of times, you know, because I think the number of people that are helped from it is more important than the skeptics and the people that are still threatened by all this.
Well, when you have a chance to help someone who has, you know, gone through the same thing, it's healing for both of you.
You know, oh, absolutely. It truly is. Because everybody's affected differently, and people remember Some people don't remember anything, but they have a lot of the symptoms. You know, there's actually a syndrome out now that's a variation of post-traumatic stress syndrome, and post-abduction syndrome, has a lot of the same characteristic symptoms, but it's pertaining, you know, to people, abductees. So it's starting to get recognized, you know, as a very serious issue. And I know there's people out there that's had positive experiences, and I hope that they've been able to learn and to use whatever knowledge, you know, for the good of us all, and those of us that have more of the negative experiences, you know, like I was speaking about earlier, if we can just learn to pull the positive from it and to learn to help each other. I mean, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, it's a cliche, but I look at it this way. I mean, we're all just one race. It's the human race. And when you have interactions with other alien species, you that really hits home hard. You know, you realize, like, wow, you know, I mean, I know that and we didn't really get into it, but there's a lot of the a lot of evidence pointing to even our species could have been, you know, alien intervention in our actual creation. So we have to learn to help each other and help each other get through this because change the perception that society has about it. There's no doubt.
Well, you know, it is definitely changing. I think it. Someplace I read somewhere that a recent poll said that something like 85% of the people believe that there is life on other planets, and I think the number of people who have had abduction experiences is a lot larger than anyone can even imagine, because, you know, a lot of people just don't want to talk about it. They submerge it. They don't remember, or they don't want to. And we have to still continue to live in the third dimension and, you know, go to work, feed yourself, pay the bills. And there are a lot of people out there. I think that your book is going to help them, and even just, you know, coming together with others who have had the same experience, because the feeling of you know, isolation and disconnection that must set up can be assuaged to some degree by realizing that you're not alone. And I think your book is really going to help a lot of people with that.
Well, I hope so. And I think it is from the feedback that I've had. And that is very important point, that if you do believe that you've had these experiences in whatever way it's surfacing, please, there are people that will listen. Speak to somebody about it. Do not keep it to yourself. You know, I call it suffering in silence. That's what I did for so long. I do not want anybody to go through that. You're 100% correct that the times, it is changing. It's a slow process, but it is changing. It's way better than it used to be even 10 or 15 years ago. And society, I think a lot of it, people... it's man's ego, first of all, you know, thinking that we're the supreme beings of the universe, and we're far from that. But we have to reach out to each other. It could be there's people that will listen and believe you, and even though they might not even be in the medical field or a therapist or something, and there are therapists out there that are specializing in this type of thing now, but it's so helpful just to talk about it. You will feel so much better just getting it out. That's the first step, and then go from there. You know, and you'll find that it gets easier and easier. But the worst thing that people that have these experiences can do is to keep it to themselves and to try to deal with it themselves, because it's just gonna eat you up.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, even, you know, if you have a bad dream. And that's not, I mean, we're not talking, you know, anything extraterrestrial. Just having a bad nightmare, if you tell somebody about it, it takes a lot of a lot of the pressure out of it, or a lot of the fear, the anxiety, just talking about it. And certainly on this subject, there are a lot of people, like you said, that are working in various fields, not all medical, and they have a lot of experience. And they've heard a lot of stuff, and they can probably, you know, fill in some blanks and help people. So, you know, we do encourage people, first of all, to read your book. And then if you do have a similar story, don't keep it to yourself.
Yeah, too many people think that they're, you know, like they're going, they're having mental issues because they're starting to have certain dreams or certain memories. And a lot of times they're just fragmented because your subconscious is really, like I said earlier, your subconscious protects you for what you can remember. You know, I remember talking to Travis Walton, and he said when he actually went and got regressed, they had to stop it because it was affecting him physically so much that they were like, you know, you just better, whatever's there that you're remembering, you should just leave it there because it's going to have such an effect on you physically, it could really get serious. And so that's what he did. And so that's, once again, even like the scars I was talking about earlier on my back, I do not have a memory of how I got them. It must have really been something so traumatic and painful that I can't remember it. Like my subconscious is protecting me from remembering that. So the stuff that you do remember, a lot of times when it starts coming out, more of it will start to surface as you'll a lot of times it'll ease in, and it's something that you do want to try to deny, but in the long run, you can't hide your head in the sand, so to speak, about it. And
right.
So, you know, the thing to do is to start dealing with it one step at a time and not let it get to the point where, like I alluded to earlier about the suicides or the drug abuse or the alcohol abuse and things like that. There's different ways that people try to escape from the reality of it. But just talking is a great, great first step.
Absolutely. Well, we do have a couple of callers, and we'll have time probably for both of them. So first of all, we are going to be talking to Teresa as soon as I get the mic open. Hello, Teresa. You are on the air with Brett.
Hi, good evening, you guys.
Hello.
Brett, I was wondering, I've had an experience of sort of seeing myself in a ship looking out the window onto Earth, and I felt as though I was getting some sort of training, and I was wondering if you'd had any memories or could relate to that in any way.
You know, I've heard other people speak a similar type thing, and I do think that there's stuff that you could I really think there's data downloads that happen, because I've noticed that in myself that at times I'll know stuff that I have no idea how I know that, you know what I mean? So, and I think that possibly the reasons for that will be revealed at the right time, you know, like, I mean, even like the whole junk DNA thing, you know, I mean, you know, science tells us, we know that our two-strand double helix DNA that everybody thinks, well, that's it. Well, that's not it. You know, there's like, they call it the junk DNA, but there's like 10 etheric strands of DNA that we have that our scientists don't even know what it's for. And I kind of believe that, sometimes this DNA is awakened in certain individuals, like it, you know, like it's like people like Tesla or Da Vinci and people like that through our history that advances our mankind. And I really think that there's alien intervention involved with that. I mean, it's a whole nother, sort of a whole nother subject and gets pretty deep. But some of my research really leads me to believe that. And that could very well be what you're experiencing and have experienced And even myself, to some regard, you know, like sometimes I even kind of laugh about it. Like, I have no idea how I knew that. But it seems like that there is some kind of sort of like what I call a data download that are happening.
Right. I mean, I know if I really want the answer to a question, I would just have to ask the question, and I just sort of wait for the answer, and I can hear the answer to things now. And are you that way as well?
I don't know if I actually hear it, but I just have an inner knowing a lot of times. I'll question, like, how do I know that? You know, like, I don't have any idea how I got that information.
And recently I read somewhere where there's certain years that they've noticed people get abducted, and 5 years old was one of those years. I remember seeing that specifically. And my granddaughter's 5 years old now, so I'm like you, I'm a little bit worried about that.
Well, it is. If you remember having experiences, most of the research indicates that it's a definite generational thing. They seem to favor, there's a lot of types of people that have been taken and will be taken, but they do seem, once they find a certain genetic makeup, and especially if you have a Celtic Native American mix, they really seem to favor that, and that's exactly what I am. But I've noticed that seems to be a genetic makeup that, for some unknown reason, they seem to favor us, at least pertaining to the grays. But it does seem to be generational, and they'll stay with that until it's watered down or changed enough that it's not what they're looking for anymore. So it is a definite concern for anybody that's had an experience is that, definitely with their children, you know, to watch out for their children. And, but there's really nothing you can do about it, but except hope that that the DNA has been changed enough that that's not what they're looking for anymore.
Well, I do have the Celtic background, and I'm also from Southern Illinois. So I'm not living there now, but I was there when I was 5 years old. I had some years down there before we moved. Also, so it's just really interesting. There's a lot of mounds down in that area also, and it's close to the river. And I've kind of heard that the mounds are associated with the ETs, but I don't have any proof of that. I just have heard that from certain people.
Yeah, the Cahokian mounds, I mean, that whole civilization was very advanced. They even had a wooden Stonehenge there, you know, there in Southern Illinois, you know, there was estimated 25, 30,000 individuals there that just vanished. And so that's a big mystery of the area there. But there is a lot of sightings. There was a lot of sightings in the area at the time that I was taken. I've looked them up, and they were documented. And that's just the reported sightings. And, of course, back in the 60s when I was taken, you know, the farmers in that area, and if you're from there or grew up or anywhere, you know how that is. There's a lot of rural areas and small towns. Nobody usually talks about that type of thing. So that's just the people that actually that spoke up about it, that saw stuff. But there does seem to be certain areas of the country where you know, there's more sightings, and some, there's be certain a flap going on with a lot of sightings, and then a certain amount of individuals taken for some unknown reason.
Yeah, I was wondering about actually the farmland, and I actually called the college down there, and the college said that they had a lot of sightings that people would call and report to them as an unidentified object, you know.
Oh yeah, that's still happening to this day. They've had I don't know exactly what year, but there was a triangle craft that was close to Scott Air Force Base there that a lot of people, Millstadt, Illinois, the small little towns, Collinsville, right through there, close to the Mississippi there, numerous sightings of a very low-flying craft. Now, whether it was alien or ours, I don't know, but if the the stuff, the maneuvers and the thing, the looks of it, you know, nobody recognized it as ours. So, and that was just a few years ago. So that stuff's continuing in that area.
Right, right there. I've been living there for the past 5 years, right in that area. So, yeah, we actually had a sighting. I saw something come through a wormhole, and my mom actually saw it. I had someone with me. It was like a pulsing light that was silver, and then like a helicopter came out of it, and we saw that happen. That was pretty amazing. That was over a cornfield, though, and it looked like it was coming through a portal or something.
Right.
The first time I've ever had anybody actually witness something like that with me, and we were wide awake. It was right at dusk, and we saw a light, and I just went to look at it. And since then, I've heard other people talking about those pulsating lights that would go forward and backwards, and it is close to the Air Force Base, like you said, so I'm not sure what that was all about, but... Yeah, well, it was just really, really interesting talking with you about that. I'm going to get your book for sure, and I appreciate you sharing your story. It helps me feel a lot better knowing other people are having these experiences, too.
It really does, and the more that you, especially if you come across something that's a similar type experience, you know, it just... There's just something in validating the experience, that knowing that you're not alone in it, it helps you to cope with it a lot better. So, but thanks for calling in, Teresa, and thanks for picking up the book.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Well, we have one more caller and just a few minutes left, so we're going to try to get Joan on the line here. Is it Joan or Joanne?
Joanne.
Joanne.
In Las Cruces.
Okay, well, you're on the air with Brett.
Brett, Joanne from Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hi.
Hi.
Say, where in Ohio were you?
I thought I heard you say
Ohio.
Yeah, I actually lived in a couple places in Ohio, but mostly around the south of Canton area, about 20 minutes south of Canton.
Okay. Well, I lived in Port Clinton between Toledo and Cleveland, and your description of your childhood home with the woods and the fields and everything and the old farmhouse is very much like mine. And I was 8 years old when I woke up laying on the ground and felt very sick to my stomach, and I realized that the earth I lived on was just a tiny, tiny little speck in a huge, gigantic universe. And that's my first memory, but I've had missing time many times. And basically, for me and a lot of my friends who've had missing time, when we got to menopause, so I heard you mention, as you got older, it seemed to be happening less. So I think it's all, you know, about viable seeds.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, I don't know if you mind sharing this. I got a vasectomy a few years ago, and one of the reasons was that maybe they wouldn't be so interested in me anymore. But they have a way around that, and they'll just go the direct route with a needle into your scrotum. So it didn't help. But
oh my.
But yeah, it is interesting that as one gets older, that they don't completely lose interest. I really don't think it's going to stop ever. And I even wonder sometimes, like, when I do pass to the other side, like, what, being that it's a dimensional, you know, like, what I'll find there exactly. And I'm certainly hoping that it doesn't carry on in some other dimension. It has helped that it slowed down, and but I wanted to tell you, when you talked about being nauseous, that is actually one of the classic signs. It's happened to me numerous times of being nauseous when I'm brought back, and also of waking up of feeling like every ounce of your energy is just drained from your body, like you.
Yes.
I describe it as being made of lead. I mean, it's just and really kind of foggy thinking for like the first day. It's really, really hard to function after an event, and people don't understand that part of it either, because we have to get up, go to work, get in society, try to be normal, and sometimes it's just really difficult because we there's physical things like that's a byproduct of what's happened to us. But that is one of the classic things, the nausea. Not every time, but I've experienced that several times.
Well, you know, I've traveled extensively, and the missing time has been many different places. I mean, even down in the Baja. But it's like they do find you or know where you're at.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And there's one thing I will take away from hearing you tonight is to share more. I guess I've been pretty quiet about it, and maybe I should open up more. So I thank
you
for that message.
You're welcome, Joanne. You're not alone, and that is one of the things that I like to reiterate a lot, because I just think it's so healing and so helpful and helps bring about more understanding for you of what's happened and why. And, you know, sometimes people that hasn't remembered a lot, they're functioning fine, you know. I mean, and I'm like, look, if that's your case, leave it be. Just leave it be. But if there's something like gnawing at you and or you're experiencing some of these syndromes from the post-traumatic, PAS, and there's a lot of them. You know, there's sleep disturbances and a lot of emotional things, you know, numbing of emotions and or having emotional reactions to the pictures and literature and the movies. You know, like me, I never could get through a abduction book, you know. And that type of thing like that, when it starts affecting you to that degree, then it's something to certainly take the steps to deal with. But that is one of the things that I have found to be the most therapeutic. And I know trust issues is a big thing. I mean, it's the whole X-Files thing, trust no one. And I still certainly pretty much live by that. But you do have to kind of let your guard down sometimes and just use your own gut instinct on who would be a person that's going to listen and not just hear what you're saying, but listen, you know, and maybe even respond back in a way that you know that they can comprehend and understand what you've went through and what you're trying to do with. Because so many people, it's just fear-based. I mean, they feel so threatened by it. Maybe it goes against their religious beliefs, and they don't want to possibly accept that maybe they might be wrong. Or they just don't, or wow, aliens are here, they're going to take over the world, or, you know, they all these different questions pop through people's minds, and it's just easier for them not to deal with it than try to accept the reality of it. But it doesn't mean that it's still not there. But there's people out there, and you'll learn who those people are, because there's even relatives of mine that I was kind of nervous about telling them that the book was out, and that turned to be like, I was surprised, you know, they were very supportive and understanding about it, and even wanting to learn more. So, you know, sometimes people will surprise you.
Well, you know, I've dealt with it, I think, very well, because I, like you, started reading very early and learning about it. But you remember a lot more than I do, and I even have a friend who could, you know, hypnotize me. But she herself has had missing time, and her sister and she are therapists. Hypnotherapist, she had her sister hypnotize her, and she had to bring her out of being hypnotized because she was screaming. So my philosophy is better leave it alone.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying for that reason, because I think that once See, mine it surfaced physically, like in the anxiety attacks. Like I think it just got to the point that my subconscious mind, I just couldn't deal with it, and I couldn't keep it from coming out, and it surfaced in the form of these anxiety attacks. And I think eventually, depending on how often you've taken or for what purpose and what you've been through on the events, it's going to be different with different people. But in my case, it's been quite extensive, and it's just a lot to take. And so it surfaced that way, and because of the way it came out and the work that I put in to help myself mentally, was a lot, and still is. I still do it, and so I think that has that kind of plays into as well as far as how much you're going to remember. But usually, when it starts to surface and start to come out, it'll be more and more and more. I've not only found that in myself, but in others as well.
Well, I thank you for being on the radio talk show, and I'm looking forward to getting your book and reading it. But thank you very much. Enjoyed listening to you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joanne, for calling in.
Thanks, Joanne. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we are just about out of time. So, Brett, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Once again, your website is childrenofthegrays.com. Your book is out. Where can people find the book? You mentioned Amazon.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I think it's available in those type of places as well. If they don't have it on the shelf, you can certainly order it. I've got a Kindle version and the print version. And I do ask, you know, anybody that's out there, if you do get the book and if it's helped you and you enjoy it, you know, please take the time and give a review. It's so hard when you come out with this type of stuff. A lot of ways people try to attack you. I mean, I've got a lot of really, really good reviews, and I appreciate that. But the more I can get, the more it dissuades the people that don't want this kind of stuff coming out.
Right.
You know? And there's definitely that element out there. So I certainly ask everybody to do that, you know, and I appreciate it because it quiets them and it helps for the work that people like us are doing.
Well, I know that will certainly help if you've, you know, if you've got, you know, like 99% good feedback as opposed to, you know, that one ornery guy, that'll really help the cause. So everyone, please do that. So I want to thank you again for sharing your time with us and your story and for the courage that you have had to kind of put this whole thing out there. So, Lavendar, we've only got 2 minutes left. Would you like to add anything before I wrap up?
Yes. Brett, I'd like to have you back on our show to talk about your spirit communication. I think there's a whole other field of endeavor that we can learn from you. So later on, would you be willing to come back and talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I might even get Gina along with me on that. She does a lot of that with me, but I'd be happy to. I think that's an important thing, and I think one of the problems that goes on is a lot of people put everything in little boxes. You know, there's the cryptozoology box and the paranormal ghost box and the UFO, and a lot of this stuff is overlapping and a lot of it's dimensional, and I think that's an important thing to bring out.
Right. Well, it's been 50 years since Who You Gonna Call? Ghostbusters, right?
Right.
50 years.
Yeah.
That we are just about running out of time here, so I just want to thank everyone for listening on behalf of all of us here at Starseed Radio Academy, and we will be back next week. And once again, Brett Oldham, thank you for joining us.
All right, Lavendar, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.